According to Division of Forest, Land, and Water Management Information Officer Pete Buist, the Delta fire isn't really news anymore. It's still going on, but his department is no longer handling it.
The state overhead crew turned it over to the Delta Area Forestry Office at 8 o'clock this morning. And they'll have some people on it, supplemented by some EFF people. And they'll be patrolling the area that's burned, which is a total of a little over 7,000 acres. But we certainly haven't called it out. We're just saying that it's in a patrol status.
What does patrol status mean?
That means that there are people on it 24 hours a day just watching for hot spots.
I understand, at least from previous reports, that this fire actually may have been smoldering over the winter and it's the old Delta fire once again. Is that true?
It could be. There's really no way to know. There was burning there over the winter and in the spring, you know, to get rid of the debris from the clearing so that they can farm it. So there's really no way of knowing, you know, when this particular fire even started.
Mm-hmm. You have any thoughts on when it might actually be out, or do you expect it to smolder again over the winter?
I don't think I'd like to pass judgment on that.
The 7,000 acres that burned, were these actually part of the agricultural project?
Most were. Some were not. Some were up in some of the home site areas that the state's disposed of previously, and on other pieces of private land on the northwest corner of the barley project there.
Were any of the areas that are being used right now for the summer bison habitat endangered by this fire? Along the Tanana River, that sort of area.
Oh, no. Those bison hang pretty much down on the river and up on the west side of the river, and that's nowhere near. That's, you know, like 30 miles from the fire.
So you're not going to have any stampeding bison getting away from the fire? Or interesting.
Probably not. Not from that fire.
Okay. Thanks very much.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Pete Buist, Information Officer for the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Forest, Land, and Water Management. I'm Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. The sun may set on the Delta bison before they ever find their home on the range. The 1979 legislation establishing a 70,000-acre range for the 300 or so animals called for a three-year sunset. 1982 is the target unless House Bills 568 and 592 pass the legislature and are signed into law by the governor. House Bill 568, now on Hammond's desk, would extend the bison range another 10 years, and 592 in House Finance since late February provides the money to pay for it. The purpose of the range is to delay the migrating bison during the fall barley harvest. The bison, now safely in their summer home on the Delta River, will migrate to winter grounds north of the highway come fall time, much to the dismay of farmers with unharvested grain. To the buffalo, or bison, the barley is an ice cream crop. Dave Johnson is a game biologist in the Fairbanks office of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Well, you have to look at the situation with buffalo and Delta in this way, and that is that the bison's traditional movements are to where the barley project is now. In other words, look at it from the buffalo's point of view, you know. They've gone this way for year after year, for 50 or 60 years now. And somebody's planted a kind of a bison ice cream parlor right in the middle of their traditional migration routes. And our mission, I guess, if you will, is to alter these migration routes. And the purpose of the bison range is to alter these migration routes to the south, towards the area that's been set aside for bison.
But it's not only munching that gets the beasts into trouble, it's the damage caused by trampling and rolling that's particularly destructive. Legislatively created grange, located south of the highway, there's only one farm in the area, hasn't been used much, or munch, because an access trail to the range through military land was never completed, and because very little land in the range was cleared and planted. 5 15-acre fields, 75 acres in all. Biologists chose those fields because soils were good and the location was close to the beast's usual migration routes. But Bob Palmer sees it differently. Palmer, Governor Jay Hammond's Special Projects Coordinator and Chairman of the Agricultural Action Council that oversees the Delta Barley Project, signed an agreement with Fish and Game Commissioner Ron Skoog in early April that calls for a thorough closure of any trails to the existing plots, abandonment of the 5 fields, and clearing 2 sections of the range some 3 to 4 miles from the barley project. Palmer maintained that the existing fields were too close to the farms and so the animals would actually be drawn to the farmer's barley rather than to the buffalo's own patches. Recent soil testing of the two new sections specified by Palmer revealed that they are unsuitable, effectively preventing Fish and Game from planting any new fields in the Delta Bison Range this year. Even if the soil had proved suitable for barley, the Game Division may still have canceled any cultivation plans, given the contention by department biologists that the bison would be unlikely to use those fields. Either way, the notion of the Delta Bison Range, alleviating the crop depredation due to bison migrating through barley fields, hasn't been tested. Dave Johnson.
I think over the long run, we're going to need more fields, larger fields, perennial grasses, and a trail system, too, because now the trails that they use lead them to the barley project. And what we would like to do is put in other trails that will lead them to the bison range. I know that we're going to be unable to accomplish this in a few short years. What it's going to take is a long-term effort, like on the order of maybe 5 to 10 years.
That's if the sunset legislation is signed into law, and the range is in effect beyond 1982. Hunting pressure, gas-powered Zaun cannons that give off a loud blast, and salt blocks will be used by the department to discourage the bison from a steady diet of illegal ice cream and onto the range. And if those mundane methods don't work, there's always high tech.
We even gave some thought to a laser fence to detect when bison are moving from one area to the other along the Alaska Highway.
But what happens if the sunset isn't extended and the range not funded?
I think that's something we've got to keep in mind, all of us. It's impossible to predict the future, of course, but my guess is that without alternative winter range for bison, there's going to be little place for them to go.
There is, however, a place for them to go. The herd could be considerably reduced in size with the excess animals moved to other locations, locations including hunters' freezers and ranches.
There is a provision in state law that surplus bison and muskox, by the way, can be disposed of. So they could be disposed of to private individuals if it were no longer possible for the state to keep them. But I think the point to remember here is that without the bison range, the chances of maintaining a free-ranging buffalo herd, the size that we now have at Delta, is probably pretty slim.
Why would we want to maintain a free-roaming bison range?
Well, you ask different people that same question, you'll get different answers, of course. And to people that enjoy wildlife, the answer is fairly clear, and that is that they're just fun to have around.
Not that you'd want a 2,000-pound pet. For me, I'll settle for the image of a buffalo eating ice cream. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. Dorothy Rebar is a whistler.
You never know when it's going to come out good or whether it's bad. Some nights it's so beautiful, you know, it's unbelievable. Other nights it's absolutely abysmal. So it depends.
Do you have to gargle or do anything special to get ready for whistling?
No, but the thing that I've found very interesting is, in the past, I'd say the last six months or so, there have been several people who have been on national TV who are whistlers. And one was a fellow that was on, I think it was maybe Merv Griffin, could have been Mike Douglas, one of those programs, you know. And he went through this whole business with the water, and then he said if it didn't work quite right, he needed to some kind of oil, which to me would be simply dreadful. And then this lady that won some kind of a national whistling contest. Now, she was on Johnny Carson's program. And so I think that maybe it's coming back. I don't know.
How did you learn to whistle?
I don't ever remember learning to whistle. All I can remember is that my mother's oldest sister told me one time when I was very young that ladies do not whistle. So right away, I was whistling all I could. Just because it was forbidden, you know, then it was lots of fun, like the forbidden fruit. And it's just something I've enjoyed. I don't whistle every day. Sometimes I might go weeks at a time, and, you know, whenever the mood hits you, why then you start whistling. And certain songs, I think, are more suited to whistling than others. And Laura's theme, that's really a nice one. And, oh golly, what are some more?
Do you consider it your musical instrument?
It has to be. It's the only one. I play the piano, you know, finger one at a time, and that's about it.
How about the trills? Do you put your tongue in a certain way or your lips together?
I'm not even aware of it. And sometimes it's easier to trill than others. I think it depends upon the amount of moisture that you have in your mouth, around your tongue, even sometimes down into your throat. It all depends. And then some nights when my throat and my mouth are very dry, it's almost impossible to whistle. It's like a singer, I'm sure, if I practiced and I did the proper breathing exercises, this sort
there.
Of thing, then it would be a lot easier for me. This way I just do it for fun, relaxation. And as I say, sometimes it comes out so clearly, and other times it is simply dreadful.
Dorothy Rebar, her whistle is her instrument. I'm Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.